There are known knowns. There are things we know we know. We also know there are known unknowns.
5 minutes past 10. Uncle Donald reminds us at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday that there's stuff we really don't understand very well. So we ask people who know stuff to come in and explain stuff so that we can understand it better. Today we thought we'd turn our attention to ADHD. Sally Warhaft is my regular co-host. She does the Wheeler Centre's Fifth Estate series of public lectures. Sally, morning to you.
Good morning, John.
Sorry, I got distracted there.
Bye.
Oh, look, there's some people working on the highway outside.
Gee, like that's new.
I'm trying to demonstrate the symptoms of ADHD.
Oh, goodness gracious, John, you're better than that, aren't you?
Oh, I just thought I'd try and,
That was so bad I actually completely missed it.
Dr. Rick Jarman is the head of the Royal Children's Hospital Paediatric Behavioural Services Unit. Rick, good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
Can you explain to us what actually is ADHD?
Well, most people have heard of ADHD. It's not a new condition, but simply put, ADHD is defined as a persistent pattern of inattention and or hyperactive and impulsive behaviour that is more frequent and severe than is typically seen at a given stage of development. The symptoms are usually present in early life. They tend to become a problem into early school age, and they may remain troublesome across the lifespan.
And it's more than just kids being naughty.
Of course.
For a long time it was just dismissed in a very judgmental way as, oh, you've just got a naughty child. This is different. How do you measure the difference?
Well, we're talking about a statistically deviant group of kids, not deviant in a psychiatric sense, but deviant in a statistical sense in terms of the fact that their inattention, impulsivity, hyperactivity is outside the normal range for age. Of course, that's a difficult call when kids are preschoolers, like Sally's three-year-old twins, because all three-year-olds are a little bit hyperactive and impulsive and excitable and restless. But certainly once they get into school age.
It's one of the really big issues with ADHD. Two things. One is sort of, and we can go back to John's little entree that I missed, that it is one of these illnesses that is sort of joked about or not always treated entirely seriously. And it is a very, very serious condition for many, many people. The second thing is that when I was reading about it in preparation for today, I think most parents, certainly three-year-olds, would tick every box of the symptoms. And so how do you know when you specialise in children, how do you know when your child's behaviour is verging into something that is not normal behaviour?
Well, if parents are having problems with a young child's behaviour, we'll try to help them with it anyway, just by reviewing handling strategies. But we're extremely reluctant to make a diagnosis of ADHD under the age of four, and certainly it's a diagnosis that we're more comfortable with once they get to school, where you have to sit quietly for 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, doing stuff you don't always want to do.
I struggled with it. In fact, I sometimes wonder, I don't understand the specific scientific definitions, but I wonder if lots of us might have been described as ADHD, because I was restless, I was called a fidget, I was constantly being put in the naughty row, I was always getting thrown out of class. I may well have been one of those kids, but there was no recognition, there was no definition, and there was no treatment.
Well, being a certain way is not necessarily an indication we'd have been. You know, if you're doing okay with your schoolwork and you're not being too disruptive and you've got friends...
I was terribly disruptive. My school reports, I probably got them in a box somewhere. I always said constantly disrupting other children.
Gee, this is going to come as such a shock to your listeners, John.
It's never too late, John.
But I'm just wondering, because if you medicalise something, of course it has consequences.
Yes. The decision to intervene with people who fall outside the normal range for age is really based on the extent to which they're having problems. So again, in preschool age kids, even if they're difficult, we try to buy a bit of time to wait for a bit of maturity, but certainly once they get into school, we'll give them a term to settle in at prep or two terms to settle in at prep. But if there are ongoing issues with widening academic gaps or serious disruptive behaviour, then it's worth doing something about, because we know that if we let that go, that's going to be a problem.
1300 222 774 is the number. 1300 222 774. ADHD, it's one of the most talked about diagnoses in our society, to say nothing of what the options are for treatment. Your calls with Dr. Rick Jarman from the Royal Children's Hospital's Paediatric Behavioural Services Unit, 1300 222 774.
Rick, ADHD for parents and carers and teachers and other people around a child, incredibly challenging. Does it always, or does it actually equate with an unhappiness in the child?
Well, it depends on how much trouble you're having in your life. You know, as I say, when we're seeing kids late, if we're seeing kids for the first time in grade 4 or 5, and they're already 2 years behind academically, and they're always in trouble, and their confidence is shot, and they have no friends because of their behaviour, then clearly they're going to be unhappy. And that projects into adolescence and adulthood as well, if the symptoms are left untreated.
And what are the sort of, you know, the processes that you know, parents come in with a child, they say, you know, we're not in control of this situation, or we don't know what's happening. How do you set about making a diagnosis? At what point do you make a diagnosis and then get on a treatment plan?
So we have no preconceptions when people bring their kids in. We parents report to us what they're observing about their child. We try to get as much information about how the child has developed and what sort of problems the parents are reporting. The more information we get from the more people, the better. So creche teachers, preschool teachers, school teachers, relatives. We often use standardised behaviour rating scales that have been standardised across tens of thousands of kids to give us a statistical idea about whether what we're dealing with is upper end normal range for age or something outside the normal range, and whether it falls into a particular pattern that might reflect a particular diagnosis. Because a lot of diagnoses are really just symptom patterns that are outside the normal range for age, whether it's autism spectrum disorder, whether it's ADHD, whether it's oppositional defiant disorder. Now, the label itself doesn't
direct... Oppositional defiant disorder.
There's a good one, John.
You've got that.
So a lot of kids who have ADHD do have associated oppositional and defiant and aggressive behaviour that's outside what you'd see with simple, pure ADHD alone. And that's often, and most of the kids we see in our clinic do have associated challenging behaviour like that. It's not just sitting and listening and concentrating that's the issue, it's their oppositionality that's the issue.
So everything is opposition. You say black, I say white.
Yes, yeah. That's right. And often that is associated with significant aggression as well.
1300 222 774. I've got 600,000 questions, although I've forgotten what half of them are because, no, well, let's get to your calls. And Jen in Riddles Creek, I think it is, first up. Jen, good morning to you.
Good morning, everyone. May I say that ADHD, dyspraxia, dyslexia, whatever it is, it's actually not a disease. It's actually a manifestation of your genetics. And here in the 21st century, where a child is expected to sit in the classroom from 9 until 3, with one adult to 30 children, one in five is in fact the, I understand the research and statistics, of a person who cannot sit still, a person that perhaps, as the doctor, good doctor said, is displays aggression. If you say black, they'll say white. May I say, being a mother of a daughter who's been diagnosed as this, now I'm dealing with her grandson who is dealing with all this. The go-to form is, well, let's medicate the child. And I'm here to tell you, don't. Why? Because medicating a child is not getting to the root cause. It mainly dumbs the child down to allow teachers in the classroom of 30, 29 to deal with his or her behaviour.
Jen, don't you have to be a bit careful in making a general and sweeping, all-encompassing statement like the one you just did? There may well be. I mean, we do have the expert here. We do have the expert here, but before I let Rick respond to you, just as a general guideline for this whole conversation, don't we need to be careful about making sweeping generalisations like that?
Sweeping generalisations, absolutely, we need to take care, but I need to say I'm speaking my own personal
from your personal experience, sure. But
this is second, even actually third generational.
Okay, let's get the response from Rick, Dr. Rick.
So ADHD is not one in five, it's one in 25%. And no one wants to treat every wiggly kid in the classroom. And Jen makes a good point. I mean, having to sit quietly for 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, doing stuff that's boring is not always that easy.
Is it a disease or an illness?
Well, we call it a disorder, not a disease. There are biological underpinnings to ADHD, and there's numerous studies that look at underlying genetic abnormalities, family heritability issues.
Is that common?
A whole range of things that are functional MRI studies, PET scan studies, there's a whole range of things that do identify an underlying biological basis for ADHD. So it's not just kids being naughty or teachers not being concerned.
The point Jen makes that it's genetic?
Strongly genetic. The heritability of ADHD is stronger than just about any other condition in medicine. 76% heritability. It's extremely common for it to run in families.
And she then says, and that I've already said, hang on, what about, we can't make these generalisations, you should never medicate it.
Well, you know, medication is not the sole treatment for ADHD, but would you not treat asthma with Ventolin if a child is suffering? Would you not treat epilepsy with medication if a child is suffering? Would you not treat high blood pressure with medication if they need it?
So
now, of course,
you don't treat every child that comes to your attention, but are you saying there are some kids for whom medication is necessary and appropriate and others for whom it's not?
Of course. I mean, there's a whole range of things we can do, from having a look at their diet to looking at supplements to correcting their sleep to working with parents and teachers on behaviour management strategies to working with older children themselves on self-control strategies. But medication is a very important component to improving school function, at least.
And one family I know has dealt with ADHD and a diagnosis of formal ADHD through sport.
Yes, the more we can run them ragged, the better, especially if they're hyperactive,
the discipline of learning to be as good as you can be at a particular type of sport did wonders. I've personally seen this, done wonders for this kid who was regarded by several schools as unmanageable, but then took up a sport, became very good at it to the point of becoming a state champion, and found the discipline of the training and the framework of the sport was all that was needed to turn this kid's life around.
Well, I saw a four-year-old a number of years ago, 21 years ago, who was wild, bouncing off the walls. I was running the Auskick program at Eltham at the time. As I said, bring him down. He needs sport. He needs to be run ragged. And he played in the 2017 Richmond Premiership team. And he's quite happy to acknowledge me as the person who put him forward for his football career.
Well, whichever one he is, I love him. is there a high linkage? Is it comorbidity? I'm not sure if that's the medical word, between ADHD and other disorders, or such as autism or OCD, do you find it linked to other things?
Yes, they're not always separate conditions. You can have a more pure form of ADHD or a form that's mixed with other developmental disorders. So ADHD does overlap with autism spectrum disorders, does overlap with oppositional disorders, does overlap with learning difficulties, does overlap with anxiety conditions. So you can have a more pure form or condition or a mixed form. And we often use the term mixed developmental disorder to reflect those kids that have symptoms in, or their toe in, two or three different pools.
Darren in Connawarra. Morning to you, Darren.
Oh, good morning, John. For once, I couldn't agree with you any more than I do right now about this. I was definitely ADHD, not diagnosed, because I'm more your vintage. And my son was diagnosed with ADHD. Now, he was medicated reasonably young, and he's now grown up into being a very well, unlike his father, a very well-adjusted, normal, successful kid or adult in life. And I think the medication was really important, because at that age, the kids are just learning, you know, how to live on this world. They're learning so much, and that was just enough to help him to get through. And then I think what happened with me, and probably with you, John, is that as you get older, you identify your personal traits and you see that they're not what they should be, and you are capable then of changing them.
Did you administer your own therapies in effect, Darren?
No, not to myself. It was only once when my son, who's now, you know, heading up towards 30, when he was diagnosed with ADHD, I then looked back and thought, my God, I wasn't aware of how genetic it was, but I looked back and I thought, my God, you know, that explains a lot about my my early days, and you know, given what the good doctor said, that it is highly genetic, and that's obviously what has happened. I suppose it just adds an extra confirmation as to what I thought.
Darren, great to hear you discuss it so with such insight after so many years. Thank you indeed. I value your call. Very, very glad that you got through. Mary in Frankston, good morning. You're next.
Good morning, John. Thanks for taking my call. It's my first time calling in.
Doubly welcome.
I have a 14, almost 15-year-old son who was diagnosed probably at about age 7 as ADHD anxiety disorder. Over the years, he has taken Ritalin, Concerta, up until about 12 months ago when he made the decision that he no longer wanted to take these because of the side effects, which the main one being lack of wanting to eat. And he's a small child anyway, and at the time was extremely sporty. So I just found that I couldn't get food into him, and it was becoming a problem. And it also, he felt that some of those medications created more anxiety for him. I guess what I'm wanting to know is, he's in year 9 at the moment, and I would say struggling as an individual. He's quite a bright kid, but lacks the ability to apply himself, to keep it together at school for 6 hours. He's only just gone back to full days at school, which he's really struggling with. He's seen various psychologists over the years, regularly sees a paediatrician.
Do you have an actual question, Mary, for Rick Jarman, Dr. Jarman?
Sorry, yep. Where do I go forward with him at this point from now? He's obviously old enough to kind of make his own decisions. I can't force him to do anything, but I still feel he needs guidance and support, and I feel I'm at a loss. I don't know where to go next.
So they're great questions, Mary, and you make a couple of very good points, and that is that stimulant medications are terrific for helping kids sit, concentrate, stay on track. But at higher doses, they can increase anxiety and weight loss can be a problem, although we can almost always overcome that with dosage adjustment or what have you. There are alternative ADHD medications that are not as good as the stimulants but still help concentration but are much better from an anxiety and mood point of view and don't have the negative effects on weight. So I'd try to get him back to see his regular paediatrician to discuss other options. It's not just about medication, but you've done plenty of the other stuff.
Might it be also that people who last saw someone about it several years ago would find that the knowledge and understanding and the treatment options have moved on since they last sought advice?
Absolutely. The standard treatments have been around for decades, but there are newer, longer-acting, smoother forms of medication. There's a new ADHD medication that just went on the PBS 2 weeks ago called guanfacine.
So there may be new things, new tricks that the doctors have got, Mary, that you're not familiar with, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Excellent. David Knowles is a pharmacist and has called in, having done some work with people with ADHD. Morning to you, David.
G'day, John and Rick. Yeah, look, I actually have ADHD myself, which is interesting. I've been there 8 years ago. And my father, when he was 7, cut his hand off, you know, mucking around on a farm. So that's the genetic component, being sort of non-consequential thinking. But the last 9 years, I've been working diligently behind the scenes. And one of the major problems we have is that the scheduling of psychostimulants has been locked away since 1970, and only psychiatrists could use them in 1970 for narcolepsy, and paediatricians could use them for ADHD because at that time they thought ADHD finished at the age of 18.
Right.
Now we know that isn't the case, but you'll find that almost a large chunk of psychiatrists in Melbourne or in Australia don't have the skill set, not because it's not their fault, but they don't know how to diagnose or treat it.
Okay, so have you done work with prisons?
I beg your pardon?
Have you been doing work in prisons?
Absolutely, and there's a lot of people who take ice.
A big undiagnosed, I would have thought, coterie in prisons. So what do we do? Do we have a program, Rick, to look at people in prison and see if there's some relief for some of their behaviour through this?
It's a very good point. All the prevalence studies of ADHD in juvenile offenders in juvenile detention centres and in adult jails show that up to anywhere between 13 and 46% of juvenile defenders or young adults in jail have ADHD. So, and they've often been untreated.
Because and often remain untreated,
often
even,
remain untreated,
even though they're in the care of the state, in inverted commas.
Yes, there are very few public sector facilities for adults to access with ADHD. They can go to private psychiatrists. Psychiatrists are Johnny Come Latelys, with due respect to my colleagues, in terms of managing adult ADHD.
Take that.
It's been considered to be a childhood disorder. But we realise now that most kids with ADHD will continue to have some symptoms into their adult years.
And I have about 20 text messages from people saying I was diagnosed in my 30s, in my 40s, in my 50s, and this was the missing piece in the jigsaw puzzle to understanding what why my life was how it was.
It's never too late. I had a father of a patient I saw yesterday said to me, I'm 50. Is it too late to do anything? My GP says, well, you've lived with it all your life. So you're not going to do anything about it now. But it depends on the extent of impairment that you have on an ongoing basis.
Is there a cut-off point, though, where with children, say, you know, if they haven't received some support by, is it, you know, age 7, 10, 15, where there's an obvious detrimental long-term impact into adulthood?
It's a very good point, Sally, that the earlier we treat, the earlier they come off treatment and the better they do. So if we're seeing a child for the first time, as I said before, in grade five, and they're already 2 years behind academically and they're always in trouble and they've got no friends, it takes a while to reverse that because a lot of secondary baggage develop. If we can treat them relatively early, and that's not to say every kid needs to be on Ritalin from age five, of course not, but if we can institute the process early, they tend to do better.
All right, let's grab more callers. Rebecca in Mount Eliza, good morning to you.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I was diagnosed a couple of years ago with ADHD, and I'm 44 now, and I was put on Ritalin, and the changes that I saw immediately were amazingly profound.
Like what?
I have struggled with feeling overwhelmed by the world for my entire adult life. I have never been able to stick to anything for a long period of time. There just seems to be so much choice in the world as far as jobs and activities. And when I started taking the Ritalin, the world just calmed down a little bit and I was able to just see things sequentially rather than as one giant blob.
Any side effects?
Not that I can see. I'm on other drugs, unfortunately, for depression and bipolar, which was also recently diagnosed, but it's the Ritalin that I saw an immediate within hours difference in how I felt in the world.
Hours?
Hours, yeah.
Rebecca, you describe really eloquently a positive experience of medication, and I think so often we hear the negative effects of it. What does that experience sound like to you, Rick?
Well, it's wonderful to hear that. It's never too late, but most children into their teens and certainly into adults can tell straight away. It's always surprising to us that younger children often aren't able to tell you how much medication's working. We're relying on parents and teachers to tell us, but certainly it's a good story, so I'm pleased to hear it.
Text messages, huge proportion of people with addictions, particularly illicit drugs, in fact have an undiagnosed ADHD, correct or incorrect?
Yes, correct. There's a big literature on that. We do know that people with ADHD, especially untreated, have much higher rates of substance use disorder than the general population because they're impulsive and risk-taking and excitement-seeking. They may have dropped out of school early, they've got too much time on their hands, they hang around with other people who've got too much time on their hands, and that leads to a slippery slope. And we do know that there's some evidence that treating the ADHD may improve their substance use disorder.
All right, and what about trying alternative behavioural change programs, meditation? I've even got medicinal cannabis being suggested as alternatives before you go to the heavy-duty Ritalin.
Well, absolutely. There are a whole range of things to do, but the idea that stimulant medication should be used as a last resort when everything else has failed is probably not how we tend to think these days. We want to do things in combination.
All right. Carolyn in Mount Albert. Good morning, Carolyn.
Morning, John. Thanks for having me taking my call. I'm really enjoying the conversation. I'm a mother. I've spoken to you before, John. I have triplet sons that have ADHD.
How old are they, Carolyn?
They're 21 now.
Wow.
And they weren't diagnosed for the first 8 years of their lives. We had hell on earth because we had trouble at school, all the things that Dr. Rick was talking about. By the time they were diagnosed, they were years behind their peers. They had a specific learning disability as well. So we had enormous problems in primary school. Then eventually we went on to medication. It made the world of difference, and it was explained to me by somebody that you have to be able to reach them before you can teach them. So once they were able to concentrate in class, then we had a chance. Mind you, years and years of catching up that I don't know that you ever actually do. When they became adults, in so to speak, inverted commas, at 18, they decided they didn't want their medication anymore. And, of course, they all got their driver's licences, started having car accidents, losing licences, you know, bombarding all over the place.
Carolyn, can I ask you a question? In
yes.
their younger years, yes. I mean, I've got twins. I can only imagine what triplets were like, even if they
I
were like
son as well,
three
so
little
I have...
Dalai Lamas, I yes. think it would still be. At what point did you feel... Or did you, you know, did you spend a long period of time thinking, you know, this is me, this is my
yes,
parenting?
Absolutely. I was, in fact, I was told that by professionals. I spent really from the time they were 2 years old, I knew there was something going on. I have an older son, so 21 months older than the triplets. So I knew that I had a benchmark, but I thought, oh, it's just their triplets, they're full on. But I started doing the rounds of doctors, and one doctor actually said to me, you need to go and do a parenting course because you're not mothering these children.
How
properly.
Common is this, Rick?
Well, you know, biology, behaviour is always the product of environment and biology, but obviously this is a very articulate description of how difficult it can be when you've got more than one child in the family with ADHD.
Let alone twins, let alone triplets.
Exactly. We always say that difficult kids make good parents look bad, and easy kids make bad parents look good.
Could you say, though, that, you know, bad parenting won't cause ADHD, but supported parenting could help it?
Of course. We can all be better. And one of the things that we spend a lot of time doing is fine-tuning behaviour management strategies with families. It's not the cure on its own, but sometimes just being a little bit better at it can make it better.
All right. Now, just finally, because we have run out of time, and the fact that we've still got a full board of calls and I'm getting screens of text messages every couple of minutes tells me how important this issue is to our listeners. And if possible, we'll get you or one of your colleagues to come back and do this again sometime soon. But just before we leave it, is it a disease of Western affluent societies?
I've heard that before, but most of the studies done around the world shows that there's a similar prevalence across all nations, across all cultures.
Okay, of course, next question, is it getting worse because of technology?
That's a good question. Maybe. We don't really know. But
Kids growing up as digital natives may be experiencing more of whatever are the stimuli that trigger ADHD, or whatever else it is that contributes to it.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with that. I think there might be something in that.
In which case, we're running out of time to do something about it, because that then becomes not just an epidemic, but a pandemic.
Yes.
And we become a very different type of society and community by not noticing what's happening. It's the frog in the boiling water.
Absolutely.
Ow. I'm so glad I asked that, and I so wish I hadn't. The consequences of having asked that question and your answer are extraordinary. It's a bit like global warming. We didn't notice until it's almost too late, and it is now almost too late. We've just got time to do something about it.
Yes, people ask me 50 times a week what to do about excessive screen use, and we say there is something called parenting, but the best way to keep kids reduced on screen time is to keep them busy doing stuff that's not screen related. So if you're training for basketball twice a week and playing on the weekends, it's time you're not spending on screens. If you're going with your mum supermarket shopping, it's time you're not spending on screens. If you're walking the dog, it's time you're not spending on screens. But most parents really battle setting limits around that. And children with ADHD, for example, are much more hyper-focused with high-interest activities than the regular, and they often seek that stimulation from screens. So
get
it's a major societal
problem. Get them a guitar or a trumpet. Get them interested in something else that captures their imagination and their attention.
And get them outside.
More. Couldn't agree more.
Whoa!
Fascinating, isn't it?
Okay. That sort of triggers all sorts of conversations that we also need to have. Rick, it's been fascinating. We're way over time. I've got to get moving. Thank you very, very much, though.
Nice to meet you both.
Dr. Rick Jarman, who heads the Royal Children's Hospital's Paediatric Behavioural Services Unit, my co-host for Known Unknowns each week, Sally Warhaft.